I want to begin by telling you a story of a young girl. This young girl was experiencing a lot of trouble in her life, and some people just didn't understand her very well. And she did what a lot of teenagers decide to do when those times come. They run away from home. So this young girl decides to take her dog and run away from home. Always take your dog with you, by the way, you know, for protection. And on her journey, she meets up with a guy who makes his living telling fortunes. And of course, he's a fraud, and he has ways to go about that. And he realizes she's run away from home, and he manipulates her to go back home, because that's where she's really loved and she needs to be. So she makes her way back home, and when she gets back home, she finds that a great storm is coming, and there's a great tornado in the distance, and she's trying to find her family members, and the wind is blowing, and the fences are getting knocked down, and all her family members go into the cellar, the fruit cellar or whatever, and she can't find them anywhere. And she's hunting and hunting and hunting for her family, and she's yelling for them, and it's getting closer and closer and closer. So she can't find them. So she goes back inside the house with her dog, and the wind blows one of the windows out of the house and hits her in the head, and she falls on the bed. Oh, this is not looking good for this young lady. The storm lifts the house and carries it to a location that she had no idea. So she wakes up after some time, and she goes outside and realizes she's not home anymore. This is not where she is from. Well, the townspeople come out and greet her. And the people of the town want to make her some kind of dignitary. And she decides that she wants to go home. And they are so thrilled because she killed their arch enemy. You see, when the house fell, it fell on their arch enemy. And these little people are so thrilled with what she has done. And she just doesn't know what she's done. Oh, no, I didn't do anything. And all she wants to do is to go home, to go home, to go home. So finally, someone shows up and shows this young lady how to get to where she needs to be. You see, she needs to go see the great one in the great palace. And there's one road, one way to follow. Follow this road to the great one in the great palace, and you will get your prayers answered, and you will be able to arrive at home. Well, this is a very thrilling thing. So she decides to follow this one way to the great one in the great palace. And along her way, she meets three friends that become very dear to her. You know, and along this pathway, there's a lot of peril and there's a lot of danger. But they make it through. And they finally arrive at the great palace to meet the great one that's going to meet her needs. And they knock on the door. There's no answer. Finally, this little door opens and says, "What do you want?" Actually, the guy might have said, "Who rang that bell?" You're with me, aren't you? And he tells him to go away. Rejection. They come to the great one in the great palace, but now they're rejected. Well, they don't take no for an answer. So finally, the great one lets them in, or one of his servants lets them in, and they finally meet the great one, who's powerful, and there's smoke and flames, and they are in awe of the great one in the great palace. But the great one says, "You have to do something for me first. You have to go get a valuable possession of our archenemy and then bring it back to me, and then I will give you what you need and I will meet your needs." Wow. I thought they just had to follow one way and get to the great one in the great palace and they got what they wanted. Now they got to do something else. So her and her three friends go back out on the journey, and it's great peril, and there's flying monkeys and all kinds of stuff, and they finally get this valuable possession, and they make their way back to the great palace. So excited. Now we get our prayers answered. And they go inside, and the great one in the great palace has no intention on granting their requests whatsoever. Rejected once again. However, the great one is exposed as a fraud. He's merely human like they are. And he tells them to go away. Now, we know the rest of the story, don't we? Because in children's stories and fairy tales, everything always seems to work out right. Unless you're the big bad guy, you might get snuffed out. But most of the time, children's stories and fairy tales work really well. The friends get what they wanted. And it found out the whole time with this young lady that it was with her the whole time, within herself, to be able to make it home. So they get what they want, and she gets to go back home. And she finally wakes up and realizes it's all a dream. You know, I think sometimes we think that this life is just a fairy tale. It's just a children's story. Somehow, in the end, it'll always turn out right. The great one in the great palace, God, who we just sang about, he's really not as great as his word says. It'll just turn out right for everybody. There'll always be another chance. The great one in the great palace, heaven, isn't really that powerful after all. He really doesn't mean what he says. James really doesn't mean what he says. We read and hear what the great one says, but sometimes our heart says, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. We've seen that in James, haven't we? We see it, and James says, oh, with all your heart, don't just hear, but do. Pay no attention to the great one behind the curtain. And sometimes we think that the great one may reject people, but in the end, he can never reject people with finality. Because basically, all people get to go to heaven, the great palace, right? That's sort of the general thought. And sometimes we think that the great one, God, is like the great one in the palace, that we can humanly manipulate him like our four friends did. We can just keep knocking. Hey, you gotta let us in. Hey, we brought the broom back. We did this, and we did this, and we did this. And it seems like in the story that I shared, the friends demand from the great one because they earned it. Right? They earned it. We did what you said. Our works saved us because we earned it. Is that the way it works? You see, James says just the opposite. Your works don't earn it, but what Jesus earned for you will produce works. But sometimes we think, you know, God doesn't really mean what he says. You know, I thought of some questions about God really based on that. Do we have a God who can be manipulated by humans? Can you really go to heaven and manipulate God? And God says, well, go back down to earth and just really help the poor, and then come back, we'll check on your salvation. Can we really manipulate God like they did in the story, the great one? Do we have a God that's going to pull a fast one on us? And we get to the great palace, and he just doesn't really care about us or to answer our requests? Do we have a God that doesn't really mean what he says? Did he just make up this thing called hell? Did he just make it up to scare people? I was sharing Christ with somebody once, and he said, I just will not be scared into believing in a Jesus. That's interesting. Jesus said, fear not them which can destroy your body, but fear him that can destroy your body and cast your soul in hell. I will not be scared into believing in God. Okay, that's your choice. Do we have a God that he doesn't really mean? Now listen, I got news for you. I could never cast anybody into hell. I could not cast my worst enemy into hell forever. I couldn't do it. But Jesus will say, depart from me, I never knew you, you workers of lawlessness. But I think it's a children's story. God will never cast our children into a burning hell because they're our children. Now, I do believe there's a certain age when they become accountable, but God didn't tell us what age. Sometimes we just think it's a fairy tale and a story. Does the great one require his followers to complete certain tasks to be granted eternal life? Well, I've just never done enough. Is that where you are today? Or how about this? Does the great one God love his creation so much that he shows them that works do not save, but that real saving faith in the gospel of Jesus Christ, death, burial, and resurrection, does produce works, and that this actually justifies or vindicates what the follower is saying from their lips? Yes. And that's what James is talking about. James is saying, oh, my dear brothers, this is serious. This is serious. I love hearing our elders pray, and I love hearing them cry and weep over people's souls, over your souls. I love it. Why do they do that? Because they know it's not a fairy tale. And James' heart is burdened about these believers who are scattered throughout. Do you truly have the evidence of real faith? Or do you believe it's just a fairy tale? And he's continuing the same thought that we looked at last week. And I trust God will really speak to our hearts about this. And if we need to be awakened, we'll be awakened. If we need to be saved today, that we will not leave this building until we repent and say, Jesus, you are my only hope. Save my wicked soul. Because I have nothing that proves I'm saved. Because remember, the only faith that counts is the faith that counts on the last day. That's the only time at the harvest when God sends his angels and reaps the harvest. Because Jesus over and over said, some I will bring to myself and others will be just burned like the chaff. It'll just be burned forever. This is important stuff. And just to review quickly from last week, we've got the points up here. There is a faith that does not save. And he talked about that in verses 14 to 17. And what good is it, brothers, if you say you have faith, but you don't have any works? Can that faith save you? If a brother or sister is hungry and naked and needs clothes, and you just say, goodbye, get fatter, get warm. James is saying, that is not the heart of a believer, though we all fail. But is that the consistency of your life? James says, that is a faith that does not save. What good is it? And then we talked about, which we're going to continue today, the form that it's inseparable is the fact that faith and works are not inseparable. They always go together. Always. Remember we talked about the sheep and the goats? What proved those people's salvation? When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was in prison, you came and saw me. When I was naked, you clothed me. It's our works that proves or justifies, vindicates our faith. And James is saying, even the demons believe. But they're not redeemed. You believe that God is one, Father, Son, and Spirit. That's awesome. The demons believe that too. But the demons aren't saved. So you, a man or a woman, can believe in Jesus, can believe in God the Creator, can believe He rose from the dead and not be saved. Listen, class, to me that is frightening. To me that causes me to be scared a little bit. Now the purpose of James here isn't for us every day to get up and go, am I saved? Am I saved? Am I saved? Oh my goodness, I'm not saved. And never serve. The purpose is, here's how you know. Yes, you fail. Yes, you break all the laws, chapter 1 and 2. But what's inside your soul? Are you burdened for others? Do you care for others? Do you control your tongue consistently? Do you care for the poor and hurting? And all these tests that James gives us. But he's saying an evidence of a faith that saves is a life that works. An evidence of a faith that does not save like the demons is a life that just doesn't work.